I'll work this. I have been told that we have to vacate this room at 9 o'clock. Therefore, we are going to try to hold very strictly to the time limits for testimony, and we ask that you limit yourselves to 5 minutes. I would like to also say that the task force members may very well have questions for you after you testify. So please do not leave the podium until I ask our membership whether or not there are questions. And given the timeline, I would also like to remind us to be brief with our questions. This is the 9th public hearing that we are having for the Governor's Task Force. And it is the second to the last one. The task force was formed in April of 1990, and it was somewhat an outgrowth of the previous task force on hate crimes. During the hate crimes task force, one of the pieces of evidence that came forward was that a great many of the hate crimes in the state of Minnesota were directed at gay and lesbian people. This task force is somewhat of an outgrowth of that. We held our first meeting in the middle of May, and since that time have been meeting regularly and have been going around the state of Minnesota to hear testimony from people about the status of gay and lesbian people within the state. We're looking for instances of discrimination, in general for what the quality of life is like, for violations of civil and human rights amongst gays and lesbians. The purpose of the task force, after the information is gathered, is to put together a report which will go to the governor, and we will make recommendations which may or may not go to the legislature. The task force itself is over on the first Monday of January. After that time, it's entirely possible that the governor or someone else may ask for a continuation of the task force, but as far as we know, we'll be finished at that time. Our process in each city has been to introduce ourselves to the group, and after we are finished with our introductions, then I will start calling people to testify. And again, I ask you to be mindful of the time limit, primarily because we do have to vacate this room at 9 o'clock. I am Jerry Sell. I am the chair of the task force. I live in Minneapolis. I'm a mom. I have 6 children. I've been extremely active in my neighborhood. I've chaired my neighborhood organization. I have been very active in school issues, and I've run for the Board of Education in Minneapolis. I work at a high school where we have a support group for gay and lesbian students. I also am the parent member of the Minneapolis Public Schools AIDS Task Force, and I belong to a parish where we moved our pastor into a house and turned our rectory into an AIDS hospice.
My name is Edward Flavin. I'm a Catholic priest of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis, and I chair on the task force the subcommittee entitled Religious Community. I'm a jail chaplain in Ramsey County.
My name is John Wright. I'm an attorney. I work for IDS Financial Services in Minneapolis, and I am manager of the communications department there.
My name is Alan Speer. I'm a state senator, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I represent a district in the city of Minneapolis.
If it's not, pull the little button.
Julie Angieskis, professor at St. Cloud State. I've been an activist on lesbian and gay issues, feminist issues, other human rights issues.
My name is Willie Bridges, and I work at the County Attorney's Office. I'm a legal service specialist. I'm on the board of directors for Minnesota AIDS Project, on the board of directors for Domestic Abuse Project, and on the Crime Victims Council.
I'm Ann Vitala. I work at the Gay and Lesbian Community Action Council in the Twin Cities. I'm an attorney. I work on a range of legal issues. I'm also on the board of the Minnesota American Indian AIDS Task Force. And also, I chair the legal committee for this task force.
My name is Anuksuk. I'm a co-founder of American Indian Gays and Lesbians, and I sit on the board of directors for the Minnesota American Indian AIDS Task Force and the Minnesota Native American Cultural Arts Program. I serve also on the subcommittee for the religious community.
For the benefit of the task force members, I had been told that the mics are voice activated, so we don't have to keep switching them on and off. We can just leave them on, and then they'll pick up our voices. In addition to Senator Speer, are there any other elected officials present. If so, I would like to introduce you. Thank you. The first speaker, Karen Thompson.
Hi. On the afternoon of November 13th, 1983, Sharon Kowalski looked at me and said, "Save Monday night for me." And for us, Monday night never came. Sharon was hit by a drunk driver that afternoon and suffered a severe head injury. She was in a coma for several months, and after coming out of the coma, she's been left a quadriplegic with severe speech complications. The really sad part of our story is that we've suffered more from society's homophobia, heterosexism, than we have from the accident itself. People would rather view Sharon Kowalski a vegetable than a lesbian. I view what we have had to suffer over the past 7 years as a form of harassment, daily harassment that we've had to go through, not only publicly, but with our legal system. And I certainly view it as a form of violence against Sharon, as I see the cost that she's paid for people's ignorance and people's inability to deal with these issues. I see my role here today, and I'm certainly representing myself, and I'm also representing Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund. I see my role to show you a real-life example of what can happen when we're not legally protected. Just what is family? It's so important that we recognize that different types of families exist. We must also recognize the consequences when there's lack of recognition of our families and when we cannot receive the same benefits the traditional nuclear family receives. As a result of not being allowed to legally sanction our relationships and the lack of domestic partner benefits, nightmares like Sharon's and mine can occur. Someone's parents can say after 7 years, there's no way a relationship existed between two people after an accident has occurred. I can arrive at the hospital the night of the accident to my partner of 4 years and be told that I can't find out any information because I'm not family, and I can spend almost 2 hours trying to find out if my partner is dead or alive. I had to fight for the right to be involved in Sharon's rehabilitation when we know how important loved ones are to the rehabilitative process. And worse than that, medical professionals couldn't even say how that loved ones are important in this case because they were afraid if they did, they'd be taking the side of gay rights. Sharon had no health insurance at the time of her accident due to her job having been cut. I'm a professor at St. Cloud State University, and I should have been able to provide coverage under our plans, and Sharon could be getting many more benefits than what she's receiving right now. I was separated from Sharon for over 3.5 years, prevented from visiting her in spite of our relationship and in spite of Sharon's asking to see me. I've spent over $180,000 fighting for our rights as a couple and certainly Sharon's basic human rights. The money could well have been spent on Sharon's rehabilitative care. Sharon Kowalski might now be home instead of living in an institution if we were recognized as family. As long as we're invisible, we're vulnerable. And if we had some way to register as domestic partners, if we could receive domestic partner benefits, this would give us visibility and some protection. There's no way we can live in our closets and feel good about ourselves. A domestic partner's ordinance would make it safer and easier for us to acknowledge and validate our relationships. Only when we can openly be who we are can we develop positive self-esteem and learn to like and respect ourselves. Certainly then we can be much healthier and productive individuals. It's time to confront people's homophobia, heterosexism. The Sharon Kowalskis have paid a high price for that fear and ignorance. Sharon could do standing pivot transfers before we were separated. When I regained visitation rights, her legs were so contracted you couldn't stretch them past a 90-degree angle. Her feet were almost arched backwards from the foot drop, and her toes were completely curled underneath. It's taken major surgery to get her legs back in a proper position. Sharon could eat before we were separated, yet they only fed her through a tube for the past 4 years. And worse than that, by the time we got her out of that institution her parents had placed her in, she had loose teeth from gum disease and a fungus growing on her tongue. But people wanted to make this a gay rights issue and hide behind that issue and not deal with the human rights that were involved. It's time all people's rights are advocated and all people are protected. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Thompson? I have one.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard in several cities, we have heard the issue of domestic partnerships
mm-hmm.
and registration of domestic partnerships come up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the counters to that is that people say, well, what this would enable people to do then is heterosexual couples who under current law have the right to be married would also be able to take advantage of these benefits. Mm-hmm. How would you counter that?
I don't see that that's necessarily negative, that people can, heterosexual couples could also register as domestic partners and receive benefits as domestic partners.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Karen, what effect do you think your case has had on St. Cloud? I mean, this has been, after all, a nationally, maybe internationally publicized case that has centered here in St. Cloud that everyone is familiar with. Do you think that it has sensitized people more to the issues of gay and lesbian couples? Do you think it has polarized the community? What effect do you think it's had?
It's really strange. I feel that it's had a greater impact nationally than perhaps locally. I guess I could answer more from, the reception I've received on St. Cloud State University's campus. The town itself of St. Cloud has been very silent in my case, and I've not really received any feedback from political figures in this town or from many organizations in this town. And that has been strange. I found that it's kind of ironic, as I said, that I've received much more support from politicians across the country than I have right here, and probably more support from politicians out of state than in state, although there have been some who have been very active from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Have you been harassed personally in this town?
Well, if you consider people calling my message machine at St. Cloud State University and my home machine and leaving messages like, you should stick your head in the toilet and flush it and things like that, yes, I have been harassed. And that many times has followed articles that have come out in like the St. Cloud Times press in the area that when they were not dealing with the issues and dealing with this as a gay rights issue, lesbian bitter over outcome of case, and instead of dealing with it as disabled woman denied the right to receive rehabilitation, people's perceptions of what were going on were very warped for a long time, and it took us a long time to get facts out as to what was really happening to a human being.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Paul Thompson.
But it's difficult.
Okay, my name is Paul Thompson. I've lived in St. Cloud for over 5 years. I've been with Lambda for about that long also. And in that time, I have seen many types of discrimination towards gays and or lesbians. Anywhere from violence to name-calling, job discrimination, housing discrimination, and even in themselves, a certain sense of fear. In housing, I myself was not allowed to re-rent a room I was living in. The landlord at the time raised my deposit so high I couldn't meet it, when everybody else only had to pay a minimum. It took me 6 months in this town to find a job. And even then, when people found out that I was gay, my employer came and talked to me and told me not to say anything about it. Or even then, even now, I still get harassed a little bit at work for being gay. A friend of mine from school had a part-time job. One day he was walking home. Two men met him and beat him. He was so terrified, he took off, was almost suspended from school. He was in such fear, and he wasn't sure if he was going to come back. I'm a very open person, and a very loving and caring person. I respect other people's rights. But someday, I would like to walk down a mall with my significant other holding hands and not being called queer or faggot, to find ample housing, to find a job where I'm not going to be discriminated against. So Salapsa.
Thank you. I have a question. Your friend who was beaten, did that occur when he was in high school?
No, that was not.
Oh, because you were saying that he was almost suspended from school, and I was wondering.
It was a vocational school here in town.
Oh, okay. And so there was an attendance requirement or something like that?
Well, there was an attendance requirement. Mm-hmm. You know, you couldn't, if you missed a day or 2 days, mm-hmm. you could be suspended.
Okay. And I have a question also about the room you were renting. Mm-hmm. Were you actually living, did you actually have a room within a family's home, or was the room separate from their quarters?
It was a board and room house. Each person has their own room, and they share living room, dining room area.
Okay. Other questions?
Was the incident reported to the police, and how was that handled?
Okay. For one, the school would not let me get a hold of him. I had to have school members call him and give him my number. And then I got a hold of some people through Lambda, and got him the necessary phone numbers to call and get information, to get help, to get counseling. No, he did not go to the police. He was too afraid.
How would the police have reacted, would you guess?
How they would have reacted? I'm not quite sure. I think they would have been very placent about it. No proof, no nothing. They probably wouldn't have done anything about it.
At least that was his sense, that it would do no good.
Right.
Have you been silent on your job? And if you have, how's that been for you? And if you haven't, how's that been for you?
There are certain people that I can speak freely with, and a lot of the employees there know that if they have any questions about homosexuality, gay rights, civil rights, that they're free to come to me and ask questions. And there are oftentimes people there that do. Other people will jeer at me, make rude comments.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next person is Brad Clark, and after him, Nancy Benno, I think. I'm not sure. Brennan, okay. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Brad Clark, and what I just handed to Jerry there was a written testimony. It involves my being declined an internship in my senior year placement at this university program based on the fact that I was gay. It's too long to go into as far as for the time limit, so I decided to type it up and turn it in for that reason. The other ways that my life has been affected by homophobia and heterosexism. An example of that for me is that I'm out to my whole family. The only person who has a problem with my sexuality is my mother. She has numerous times tried to control my finances and stop supporting my education, me getting through school. Not only has this been difficult for me because every time the rent's due or whatever the finances are set up for this year, I have to go and plead with my mother and my father to make means for me to stay in school. Not only that, but I have to deal with the family dissension. My father has to coerce my mother that this is the best thing and that this is his senior year, he's almost done, that we should support him so he can be self-supporting in the next year. And then it involves my brother and his wife. When I turn to them and feeling frustrated, I have to go and ask them to listen to me and hear my story so I can feel better about the situation. Another example is I have been denied the right to see my nephew, my brother's first wife's child, and his wife's child. My nephew lives with his maternal grandparents. When I was allowed to see him, I would spend time with him, I would play with him, hold him, hug him. When he went home, I was later told that he was forced to take a bath and have his hair washed because if he had spent time with me and his family was afraid that he would get gay by spending time with me. His family had no idea that I was gay. They had never heard me say it specifically to them. It was all their suspicions. And then finally, I'll close in about a job situation. I had worked in a social service agency. I was working in home with group in a group home for developmentally disabled males and females. Part of my job was getting them dressed and ready for school. The other part of the job was coming to the house after they would be coming home from their day school and providing them activities and community integration and getting them ready for bed at night. The employer that my supervisor had a policy where he went out with a lot of the college students and had a really working relation outside of business relationship with the students. And so after I had been there for a couple months, he asked me one night if I wanted to go out to a college town bar and have a couple drinks, and I thought nothing of it. I had asked a couple of the other workers that evening if they went out with him, if this was a frequent and regular thing, and they said, yeah, it's no big deal. So I went out, and we were at this bar, and I decided that I needed to go at 11. I was meeting some other friends of mine. They were celebrating getting a job, and we were having a party for this friend. And I said, to my supervisor, I need to go now, and I'm going to meet my other friend at the bar downtown. And I mentioned the name of the bar. And he said, well, that's a long way. It's about 3 miles. I can give you a ride. And I said, well, you don't have to do that, but if you'd like to offer, that's fine. So he gave me a ride, and as we were driving there, he asked me if he could come in the bar. I stated to him that it was a gay and lesbian bar, and that would be his choice if he entered the bar, but he should be aware of what he's encountering when he goes in. He said that he was fine with that, and we went into the bar. We socialized with some of my friends, and at the end of the night when the bar closed, he asked me if he could ask me a personal question. I said that was fine. He asked me, are you gay? I said to him, yes, I am gay, and now that's one less thing that I'll have to worry about coming into my job. I don't have to worry about if you're going to think it or if you're going to find out. That happened on a Friday night. On Monday, I got a phone call from him. On Tuesday, we had a set-up interview, and my hours were reduced from 27 hours a week to 6 hours a week. I was also expected to maintain an $80 a month car insurance payment that I was required to have because of my community integration with my clients. I had to have this insurance because of the wheelchair and the liability for my clients. And on six hours a week at $4, it was obviously not feasible. And it also caused me to end up dropping out of school at the end of that, or middle of that semester, because that was my finances for the school year. I had worked at this and had dedicated myself to this job and to my schooling, and all of a sudden it was gone. I had no other choice but to resign the position. I obviously could not stay in that position.
Other questions?
Yes.
What was the reason for declining the internship?
It's included in the written testimony.
We have a written
There were basically three reasons. They said that I had an intention-seeking behavior, boundary disorders, and I was. There's another one, but I don't remember right off hand.
Were you aware of there any policies that were set? What was Were you aware that there was limited what the internships could do, were there policies set, or?
I'm not sure I'm understanding.
I'm saying, were there guidelines, what were the requirements for the internship?
The requirements were for the internship that you had to have a certain GPA, mm-hmm. and that they talked about a work ethic, the social work ethics. You had to understand them and work with them. And then they talked about interpersonal and intrapersonal skills, and that's what they used to deny me my internship. Included in that article, it goes on to say, at the last day that I was at that school, I turned in a project, and as I was leaving, I went and sat in a reception area of the social work department. I was talking with the receptionist, who was a personal friend of mine. And as I was about to leave, a chairperson of that department walked out of the office. There had been a heated debate about a project that I had done that semester on gay male treatment centers. And I had heard him yelling at my research methods professor and had said, my research methods professor had stated back, that's not how he approached it. He approached it very businesslike, very ethically, and he's doing it because he's aware that this needs to have more research done in it. It's not just because he's gay. There's more to it than just that. I'd heard that specific statement. The chairperson walked out of the office. When he saw me, he almost dropped a packet of files and said to me, you heard everything I said. And that's from you when I had it. And that's the only thing that I need to say with that.
Yes. Was this incident recent?
This happened just in May of 1990, yes.
At what university?
I don't want to name it because right now I'm in the pursuing a lawsuit.
Oh. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Address these remarks in levels, starting with SCSU, St. Cloud State. The Lesbian Gay Faculty Caucus was originally developed to really monitor the campus environment in terms of homophobia and heterosexism, and we were going to get started and start and kind of see what happened and what we came up with. And we began to start dealing with some discrimination complaints. One of the complaints was one that I filed against St. Cloud State University in a hiring situation where, although gay and lesbian people are protected at St. Cloud State, they are not protected in terms of hiring. So there were two candidates for a position. I was on the search committee. One of the women identified herself in a very wonderful way as a lesbian. The other woman identified herself in a similarly wonderful way as a heterosexual woman. Despite that the committee recommended that the lesbian woman be hired, she was not hired by the university. I filed a complaint and no discrimination was found. Another situation that we're trying to deal with there is that when homophobic remarks and behavior occurs in a classroom, a student, in order to protest that or file a complaint, really must come out to the affirmative action officer. Sometimes that student does not want to come out at that particular time for various reasons, and then the complaint will not be heard if the student does not say that it affected him or her personally. Another complaint that was a complaint of sexual harassment that I was working on, I think, was very trivialized by our affirmative action system because the complaint came from a lesbian woman. And it seemed to me that some of the attitude was that how could a lesbian woman be sexually harassed by a male? We have very few faculty who are out to students at St. Cloud State. I think that a lot of that is well justified, but we certainly need to deal with that, and we need to have a more visible community there. We have a good deal of homophobia in our athletics department that has really not been addressed, and I think Karen is always very kind when she doesn't mention that she is in the PE department at St. Cloud State, and there have been people, grad assistants, et cetera, who have been told not to associate with her when they come to do graduate assistant kinds of things there in the PE department because of how they might be viewed as lesbians. We have another problem, which is that cultural diversity needs to be cultural diversity at St. Cloud State has been viewed as encompassing a variety of groups, and I think that's been our strength. We're currently, I think, under siege in terms of trying to maintain that. What's happening is pitting groups against each other so that cultural diversity begins to mean only people of color, and then we have those other groups. I think we're fighting that, but that is very divisive and is something that needs to be addressed. I'm also a professor in social work. I think there are many issues in social work and social services that definitely need addressing. One thing that perhaps this committee is going to be considering is incorporation of something in the licensure exam for social workers so that they need to demonstrate that, in fact, they are going to be able to go out and provide non-homophobic service to clients. And I could probably talk all night about the ways that doesn't happen. We have numerous students in social work at St. Cloud State who say that their religious value system takes precedence over the value system as presented in the social work profession. Personally, I bore the brunt of a particular group who filed a petition with the dean against me saying that you had to be a lesbian to get an A in a social work class. And this particular class had one article out of maybe 20 articles about diverse groups that dealt with gay and lesbian issues. That petition, I believe, contributed to the fact that I did not get promoted a year ago at St. Cloud State. There's one other area. I am also a parent. I have one child that went through the St. Cloud schools and has graduated. I think that it's imperative that something be done in the schools in terms of education and offering support services, both for children who are in gay and lesbian families as well as gay and lesbian students. My two younger children are going to be going through the St. Paul Public Schools, but I do have yet to see anything that specifically addresses that there either, although I think that there's going to be more openness to that.
Thank you. Are there questions? Ms. Brennan?
Yes. You've voiced a number of criticisms of St. Cloud State, and I'm wondering, since you do work for one of the few institutions in town that does have a sectional preference included in its guidelines, do you have anything positive to say about St. Cloud State? Do you have good experiences you can relate as well?
Well, I think the fact that we exist, the Gay Lesbian Faculty Caucus does exist, that's positive. I think the fact that we do have a mechanism in place that students can use and faculty can use is a positive. I think we need to get a lot more, you know, I think we've got a lot of work to do in terms of using that effectively. But it is there. I really don't. I think I have a sort of bad feelings, but you know, there may be other people who will testify that there are glorious things going on over there that I'm not aware of.
Any other questions?
It doesn't sound like you win many fights over there. You take all these complaints in and they all get denied. What's the force of the state university's policy, and what good does it do if there are no enforcement mechanisms?
I think that's a very good question. I mean, I think that's the point is, how are we going to get some teeth into this policy so that it really does offer protection? Because I think the students there are some that are out, but it is a very small number, and a very small number of faculty. I think when those protections can be trusted, when you know that you really can trust them and they're going to work for you, gay and lesbian people will come out and they will be active and they will make contributions. And I think right now they're pretty smart to not be doing that because the protections are not there. The awareness, the lack of knowledge about how homophobia works, the ways that people can get around it, the justifications that can be used so that it doesn't look like homophobia, you know, very strong.
Any other questions?
Thank you
very much. At this time, I would just like to, for the benefit of all those people who came in late, tell you what our system is. If there is anyone here who would like to testify, we ask you to sign up, and there's a sign-up sheet here on this first table. Pierce will hold it up. And just come down and give us your name, address, and affiliation if you have one, and we will call on you. We also are delighted to take written testimony. Those of you who would like to tell us something and do not want to say it and don't want to give us written testimony here, when you came in, you should have gotten a sheet that was guidelines for the public hearing, and at the bottom is the address of the Human Rights Department. You can send things to us there in care of my name, and we will get them. If you would like to talk to us, there is a toll-free telephone number on the bottom of that sheet, which is also the Human Rights Department. You can leave a message there, and I will return your phone call. So we have several ways for you to access this committee which do not involve getting up and saying something publicly if we would rather not do that.
Jerry?
Yes.
You want to mention that there's an opportunity for talking with us privately tonight?
Right. In addition to that, the host committee, who deserve a lot of thanks for setting up our visit to the St. Cloud area, has arranged for tomorrow morning between 9 and 11 for people who would like to testify privately to meet with us. And this will be at the Atwood Rudd Room, which I assume is the is that the campus? Or yes, on the St. Cloud State University campus. So that's between 9 and 11, and anybody who would like to take advantage of that opportunity is welcome as well. And as long as we're taking a little break at this time, I would also like to introduce our two staff people who have been very, very valuable to us and have been extremely busy. Callister College. And Julie Hayes, who is taking minutes tonight, is a student here at St. Cloud State University and is doing an internship with a member of our task force. All right. Alan Natko.
Because I felt sort of bad as I sat down because I got paralyzed when you asked me these positive things. Yes, there are positive things. And one thing it occurs to me as I think about it is that our new women's center at St. Cloud State did some training in homophobia and heterosexism and has some really good offerings, I think, this quarter. On this month particularly have to do with lesbians, and also I think are going to be making an effort to bridge some of these between two groups. So I want to be
thanks
sure to mention that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Alan, I'm sorry.
I had originally presented this during the hate crimes hearings that were held across the state of Minnesota. And I'm not sure whether information that had been contained in those hearings is part of the body of information. So then would it be agreeable to, it's pretty much the same that I had originally used. Okay, my name is Alan Natko. I'm a licensed psychologist, an educational counselor, a former advisor for the St. Cloud State University Gay and Lesbian Student Organization, and a teacher of a St. Cloud State University course on heterosexism and homophobia. And I'm gay myself. I feel that a governor's task force on gay and lesbian Minnesotans is long overdue. I would like to provide both first and second-hand information to prove that prejudice, oppression, and violence do occur on the basis of sexual affectional orientation here in St. Cloud. In the early 1980s, there was a bar here in St. Cloud called the Matador, which became identified as a minorities bar. As I recall, foreign students, racial minorities, and gay and lesbians were the bar's most numerous patrons, and these groups tended to get along very well. I suspect that one of the reasons for this peaceful coexistence was that these groups realized that they were not welcome in bars primarily frequented by non-minority individuals. During St. Cloud State University's fall quarter homecoming weekend, a group of friends and I went down to the Matador. After dancing for a while, I went to the men's room. Upon entering, three non-minority men already in the restroom stopped in their tracks as I entered, and one of them said, "You fucking queer. I should push your face in." At which point I stopped short and said, "You have no right to talk to me like that, so mind your own business." He stepped up toe-to-toe with me, saying, "Make me." I stood my ground, looked him in the eye, and said nothing. After a long silence, one of the people he was with grabbed him by the arm and said, "Come on, let's get out of here." This was not the only incident of harassment and violence at the Matador that I became aware of. Individuals leaving the bar at closing time occasionally would be jumped for a little bit of queer bashing. Because of the fears of becoming further victimized by what many gays and lesbians perceived to be unsympathetic or outrightly hostile police officials, these incidents, to the best of my knowledge, were never reported. In the summer of 1982, I had gone out for a walk. As I was crossing 2nd Street North, mid-block between 14th and 15th Avenue, a red AMC Hornet with a young male driver and no passengers drove up very rapidly and slammed on his brakes. The driver's door was literally inches from my legs. It nearly ran over my toes. And the driver glared out the window and started screaming, "You fucking faggot, I should have run you over." As a pedestrian, I've always been careful to protect myself and yield the right of way to automobiles. In this case, I had noticed as I was stepping off the boulevard that the car was accelerating and steering at me, and I froze in place. My feeling is that the driver's behavior was not that of a motorist frustrated and inconvenienced by a pedestrian, but rather that of an aggressive homophobe. During the 1985-86 academic year, I became aware of an openly gay student's struggle against repeated physical and verbal assaults while living on campus at St. Cloud State. Again, because of a sense of isolation, fear, and powerlessness, this individual feared to report these incidents. Ultimately, the student was released from his dorm contract and then moved off campus. Since that time, the State University Board has included sexual affectional orientation in its non-discrimination policy. Had such a policy existed during the student's struggle, I am sure that it would have assisted the student to stand up for his rights at a time when he felt that he had no rights. Other than the prepared statement, one of the comments I'd like to make is that as an advisor and an active participant in the student organization at St. Cloud State across the past 11 years, I've become very, very aware that probably one of the most powerful elements confronting students, young, emerging gay and lesbian people, is a tremendous sense of isolation and the very great need for networking, for some positive role models, for some officially sanctioned support for themselves, their lifestyle, etc. And with that, I thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to present this information.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Neck?
I have a question. Do you feel that there is any access for gay and lesbian bisexual students at the U or in town, for that matter, to have?
I'm having a hard time hearing.
Do you think that there is access for gay, lesbian, bisexual young people to, or anybody in the community who would like to have access to material in the libraries and so forth that would give them some kind of idea, about alternative lifestyles or what it means to be gay or lesbian or bisexual?
From what I know, and I'm not real familiar with the public library's collection, but I will say St. Cloud State has what I would say a reasonably good collection, but most certainly many of the materials that are deal with homosexuality, many of them are aged and are very negative. The St. Cloud State University student group a couple of years ago donated their library, which tends to be very affirmative, gay and lesbian affirmative, bisexual affirmative, and those are now holdings of the St. Cloud State University Library. Other than, I'm really not familiar with the public system, though.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michael